the Dave Dameshek Football Program. Available on iTunes and at davedameshek.nfl.com. Now here's your host, Dave Dameshek.
Hi and hello, football fans. It's your old pal Dave, Dave Dameshek. What's going down? I hope all's well wherever you are. Welcome to the Dave Dameshek Football Program. Available as always on iTunes and at nfl.com/Sheck.
S-H-E-K, Sheck, Sheck, Sheck.
Welcome to the month of March, everybody. Welcome to free agency. It is, it's just about here. Of course, the names, big ones at that being released. We're hearing about franchise tags, transitional tags, all this stuff. You know, that reminds me. Greg Rosenthal on the Around the League podcast talked about it just the other day, and I couldn't agree more. This we've reached a weird place here in the 21st century as pro football fans, as sports fans in general, that we know way too much about salary cap implications and what the cap hit's going to be in 3 years. And likewise, we know way too much as fans about TV ratings, and we lament when it's not our business what the NBA Finals is going to be. Oh, if they get San Antonio versus Orlando, that's going to do horribly for the commissioner and for the NBA. Who cares? It's not your responsibility. Let's talk about football. Let's talk about the sports media. Let's talk about it all with one of our very favorites who we've discovered in just the last few months here. He's like an old pal, though. His name is Ross Tucker, and he's back on the Dave Dameshek Football Program. Ross Tucker, what's the poop, fella?
I'm doing fantastic, Dave, but before we get into anything football, I have a very serious question for you.
Lay it on me.
So I noticed in your email address, and I won't give out your email to the millions of people that are listening right now, but I noticed in your email address you have a number.
Yes.
Now, I have a number in my email address as well, and I'm not even going to say when it's from because I don't want people to be able to guess what my email address is, but it's from a jersey that I wore sometime between high school and the NFL with the five different teams and either football or basketball. That's my hint. But I'm curious, Your number jumped out at me. Is there any significance to that number?
Yes, there is. Yes, there is, Ross Tucker. Of course there is. There are no accidents in this world, don't you know?
But it's not your number.
My number? Ross Tucker, you and I have met face-to-face. Did I play college level sports? Did I play pro level sports?
I didn't know if it
was
a high school number or something. So I just figured you out. I know exactly what it is, but I won't give it away so people don't guess your email address.
Well, they'd have to be pretty lunkheaded to not be able to figure it out with that. So it's not my number, but it is an athlete's number. As we sit here in Studio 66, I wonder what it could possibly be. Anyway,
I didn't know it was Studio 66. That's
funny. Well, listen, the last time I saw Ross Tucker, he had his lovely bride on his arm. We were in kind of cold New York City, not nearly as bad as we expected, though. But my heart was warmed by getting the glad hand with Ross Tucker, who proved in person to be even more delightful than he was over the phone when we kibitzed and we had to have him back. ASAP, Ross Tucker, hip everybody. It's a great podcast, the Ross Tucker Football Podcast. You don't like the fancy way I do mine.
I don't go program. I go podcast. And you caught me in a very good mood that night because we had just come back from the Taste of the NFL event.
Oh yeah,
you got to go to one of these days because it's literally a famous player and a famous chef from every NFL city, and the chef makes the dish that's most well known in that city, like his own little twist on it. And then there's obviously a famous player. It's always really funny because everybody that's there and they pay a lot of money to be there, they're in line to get autographs of the famous player. And I don't even talk to those guys. Like, I have no interest in them whatsoever. I go straight to the food. And this year I hit all, I think there was 36 stations because there's like a Hall of Fame station and a Miami Dolphins, undefeated season station, blah, blah, blah. Mm-hmm. Anyway, I think I hit all 36 in like an hour. and then I had severe stomach cramps, and my wife and I had to leave. So we were there from like 6 to 7:15, maybe.
Well, good. So I saw you around 9 o'clock. So no wonder you were in such a delightful mood. All the food had settled into your belly and was making you feel bad. And yet, like I say, you were nothing short of a delight. Listen, we got a lot to kibitz about here. Have you ever? We could talk about all manner of things, and I'm going to get to as many of them as possible. Have you, though, Ross Tucker, former pro football player, have you ever gotten another pro football player's autograph? Or anyone's autograph, for that matter, adult, I mean.
Well, so two things. One is I was a big-time autograph collector growing up.
Hmm.
And I was, like, relentless, dude. I mean, it was, for me, I think it was more the thrill of the hunt than anything else. I mean, I can remember, you know, I have Randall Cunningham's autograph like 16 times. I used to go to Eagles training camp, and I would get his autograph time after time after time. Like, I was serious about it, dude. Like, I would go to training camp wearing, like a button-down and slacks so that they thought, like, I was, like, the owner's kid or something, and they would just let me walk in places because nobody wears that at training camp. You know what I mean?
Yeah, right.
Nobody wears something. Like, everybody's wearing T-shirt and shorts. I'd wear, like, a button-down and slacks and just walk into, like, the player's dorm like I own the place. And a lot of times I've noticed that security people, they just think that you do. You know, that's the key, is just walk in.
Yes.
So I have all manner of Philly, you know, Mike Schmidt, Charles Barkley, you know, Randall Cunningham, those guys, all the guys that played for Penn State back in the day. My best autograph, though, was at the Mike Schmidt Celebrity Golf Tournament when I was 12. It was 1992. I guess I was 13, maybe. And Michael Jordan was there, and this was right before he was going, or right after he went to Barcelona for the Dream Team, the Olympics. So this is like the height of Jordan popularity. He's playing golf. There's a gigantic crowd, and I was this kid, Dave. Every time any of the guys he was playing with went for a backswing and everybody was quiet, I would scream, "Michael, please! Michael, you're my favorite player!" And he was not my favorite player at all, but I had a mission. You know what I mean? Like, it's autograph collecting is a results-oriented business. Like, there is no close, right? You either get it or you don't. So finally, after a couple holes, Michael Jordan comes over to me, and I did not dress up.
And says, "Will you shut up already? My guys we're losing because of you. You're making too much noise. We're all hitting terrible shots here."
You know what's funny, Dave? He actually came up to me and said, "Hey man, you know we're trying to play golf." I was like, "I know, but you're my favorite player." And then he looked at my tank top. I did not dress up for that event, and I had Jack McCluskey basketball camp, who was a local college basketball coach. But at the same time, that was the name of the Detroit Pistons general manager.
Ah, so that's why I rang
like,
a bell.
"Jack McCluskey, you went to Jack McCluskey basketball camp?" Like, you know, incredulous. And then by that time, he had signed the cover of the Sports Illustrated, where he's smoking a cigar. I had it in my possession, and then, boom, a wave of, like, 500 kids hit me. But mission accomplished, I got it. To answer your question, in the NFL, I only ever got two autographs, and I got them on the same football, and I got them my rookie year, and it was Bruce Smith and Darryl Green.
Ooh.
It was my rookie year. Both these guys were, like, mid to late 30s at the time. I had watched them my whole life, and I knew they were both going to the Hall of Fame, and I thought, you know what? That'd be a nice keepsake to have from my, you know, NFL days. At that time, I thought maybe I only even play one year. So I kept that for a while. You know what's interesting, Dave? And I'm not ashamed to say this. We recently moved, and I took every single autograph I have to, like, a local auction house.
Mm-hmm.
I can't even remember their name right now. Hunt Auctions, I believe. And I sold them all.
Really?
Yes, because I'll tell you why. Because I have enough crap, for lack of a better term, from when I played, in terms of like jerseys and memorabilia and game balls, and because, you know, Dave, I got so many game balls in my career, but no, but like, you know, cleats and stuff. And my wife's like, I'm not gonna pull out a certain autograph to show my daughter. So I just,
it's so true that that's right. What are you doing with them? People who keep them filed away, especially in books and stuff. You know what I did, and you're going to be a little upset. Maybe you'll realize that you should have done this, although you made a little bit of bank off of your yours. But my old man, you know, he was associated when I was growing up with Pitt football, Pitt basketball, right. the university. So I have photographs and autographs from Danny Marino and Hugh Green and all the great guys that were there in that age, and the Pittsburgh Penguins. So I have all those autographs, and I thought, what a waste. Exactly. I had a revelation. What am I doing with these? They're sitting in a box turning yellow. How awful. I framed them all. I put them all under one huge collage frame. I was very crafty that day, but you know what? My eyeballs thank me every day since when I look up at those and see all those great autographs.
Yeah, you know, that I can see that. That's pretty cool. I guess where I would come from is I barely, you know, I only put up like my football frame jerseys in sort of my man cave type deal.
Mm-hmm.
So where am I, like, where would I put up, like, other stuff? You know what I mean? Like,
it's weird for you to do it. Yes. I am in arrested adolescence talking about football and talking about the deeds of other grown men. You played, so it gets it's almost cannibalistic for you to do.
Yeah, so just remember this, Dave, always when we talk. It's about me, dude. You know what I mean? Like, it's about me. Other people lie and say it's not about – no, it's about me.
All right.
You know what's funny about that, in all sincerity, is after that, and I went to the Cowboys, and I'd have guys – that like were 3 years older than me in high school that I wasn't really friendly with. You know, I just kind of knew them. Mm-hmm. And I go back home in the off season. I'm starting at left guard for the Cowboys, and the guy's like, he gets my number from a friend of a friend, whatever. And he's like, hey man, I got a great idea. I'm like, okay, let me hear it. He's like, I'm gonna give you a mini helmet, and can you get Emmitt Smith to sign it for me? And I'm like, that's a great idea. what was idea number two? And he, like, it's amazing, Dave, how people were like so surprised when I would tell them that I would not do that. Because I try to explain to them.
What a slap in the face to you. No one, yeah, you're nothing, Dust. We want Emmitt Smith. He's a...
Well, not only that, though. My point to them was like, you guys got to understand. And part of it's all this locker room stuff that we've been talking about in recent weeks with the language and Michael Sam and all that stuff, right, is that the locker room for those guys, that's like the one place in life they can get away from all that stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that's the one place where they, like Peyton Manning's hilarious in the locker room. Like, it's the one place where they can let loose, they can be themselves, they don't have to worry about people watching them, they don't have to worry about being asked for autographs, they can just be a normal person as opposed to when they go anywhere else. So the last thing I was going to do was going to ask Emmitt Smith or, you know, Tom Brady or any of like, you know, the big name guys I played with for their autograph. You know, it was enough.
I hear your noise.
Have hung out with them a couple times socially, to have blocked for them, to play for them. A, I didn't need to get their autograph for myself to justify that. And B, I certainly wasn't going to get their autograph for anybody else unless, you know, it was a charity thing, and I thought, you know, it could raise big-time money, and I thought it was a good cause. Then I might go that route, but not a great idea because of this guy from my high school wants Emmitt Smith's autograph for his house.
Well, listen, that makes perfect sense. Although I do find – well, first of all, by the way, Adam Rank has now joined us here in Studio 66.
What's up, Adam? Hey, what's going on? You know what? I have this same thing happen to me. Like, I was at the Bray Improv last week. Some young man came up to me and said, hey, I'm a huge fan of the show. Is there any way Dave can get something? Can he sign this photo for me? Like, really? Like, I'm supposed to carry this back and have my coworker?
Oh, that's – now, see, that's bad. See, Ross Tucker, can you get us Emmitt Smith? That's like, well, he's a Hall of Famer.
That makes
sense. Adam Rank, can you get that other dope to sign something? It really doesn't make a difference whether it's Rank
not famous
or Damashek.
Yes.
Yeah, there's no,
you know,
difference.
What's crazy, by the way, about Emmitt Smith and Brady, now that we talk about it, they're probably two, like, the most famous guys I played with.
Uh-huh.
They're both really bad athletes.
Like, what?
Emmitt Smith is a bad athlete?
Dude, when I was there, it was 2002. It was his last year. And not only was he small, he was slow. But what's crazy about it is he still got yards. Check out some of the games we had in 2002. We had the worst offensive line in the league, and I'm not ashamed to say that.
You were on it.
And we literally, I mean, I'll put it this way, right? I'm a journeyman, and out of the seven games I started because Larry Allen got hurt, I graded out the highest in six of the seven. That tells you how bad our line was, right? And we still had several games where he got 100 yards. And I'm telling you, I don't know if you guys have ever seen him. He's not a big dude at all, and he's not fast. Like, but he had an unbelievable ability to always read the blocking exactly right, to always know what cut to make, and to always, like, even when there was nothing there, he'd find this little crevice and, like, dive forward for 4 yards. It was unbelievable. He had some of the most impressive, like, 2 to 6 yard runs I've ever seen because there was nothing there, and he did not get by at all on physical ability. And that's why he actually had some decent games until he was, like, 34 years old. He was running the football with his brain at that point. And Brady, like, when you do agility drills in the off season.
Everybody's seen the combine stuff when he clunks his way through all those foot speed drills.
Dave, he's even worse doing like agility drills, and everybody like makes fun of him. And when I was there, it was like the off season of 2006, 05 and 06, and everybody laughs at him, and like he gets mad and does it again. It's like, dude, you've won 3 Super Bowls, you're married to whatever, you've got all kinds of money. Like, why are you doing the dot drill again? Why are you running through these cones again because we're making fun of you? Like, why do you even care? But he does. He really cares, and I think that's why he's so good.
Why? I want to talk about these sort of things, these guys in the locker room, these big-time stars. I've heard from a lot of people who know him, Tom Brady, cool as it gets, you know, regular guy, decent guy. Tell me about what you know about him.
Well, first, and I've said this publicly, I think, once before, so this isn't the only time I'll say this, but he is, I'm 34, I just turned 35, actually, and I've drank a lot of beer in my life, okay? I thoroughly enjoy
it. Oh, we have a lot in common.
Yes, yeah, so for about 20 years strong now, I've been drinking beer. Well, actually, not till I was 21, in case my daughter's ever listened to this, but anyway. Tom Brady, and people think I'm joking when I say this or I'm exaggerating, he's the single best chugger of a beer I've ever seen in my life.
Wow, if that's not hyperbole, because, you know, being in college and around football guys, I imagine a few of them have that trick where they can just open their throat and make it disappear.
Dave, Adam, I was a lineman, A, and B, I was in a fraternity. So I can't tell you how many times I've chugged beers or I've chugged beers against guys or I've seen guys chug beers. And there was a guy, Chris Havener, 2 years younger than me at Princeton, offensive lineman from Doylestown, CB West. He was unreal. Brady's better than him. I mean, I can remember during training camp, Belichick gave us the weekend off because he wanted to go see Harry Carson get inducted into the Hall of Fame. So literally during training camp, we got the weekend off, which is like amazing. And there's a couple offensive linemen, Ryan O'Callaghan, Dan Stevenson, a couple rookie drafted offensive linemen, and they're talking about, you know, how fast they can chug beers and whatever. And Brady's like, "You guys want to put some money on it? You guys want to see?" and they're looking at like Brady's all skinny, pretty boy, the whole deal, right? And they're like, "Heck yeah, let's do this." And I'm like, and Brady's like taking bets, and I'm like, "Oh man, I got Stevenson. You know, he's a big goofball from Notre Dame." I'm like, "I got Stevenson," and like the veteran Patriots offensive linemen all looked at me and they kind of were like, they all just gave me that look. So I thought, you know what, forget it. I don't know you well enough. I'm not betting on you, Stevenson. The beer literally couldn't have come out if he just took the cup and dumped it out as fast as he could.
Wow.
It was unreal. And I came away from that actually angry that God would give one male every positive masculine quality known to man.
That's my reaction too. Good for you that you're good enough to be a professional athlete, Bo Jackson. You don't have to do two. Now you're just rubbing my face in it, you know?
Right. Like really? Like you're good looking, you're smart, you're a quarterback, you got your wife or whatever. You really have to be the best chugger I've ever seen too. Like at some point it's too much for me. It's too much. But he was an awesome, legitimately awesome guy. Really smart guy. Like when we were in the cold tub, he would be reading, like, sections of the newspaper that weren't the sports section, if you catch my drift.
I got you.
You know, like, he would read other aspects of life, which is kind of unique. So that's what he was like. Emmett Smith would always talk to me about business. So Emmett was, you know, tail end of his career. He knew I went to Princeton. So he was very into the, you know, his post-football business empire. And he's done very well with it. He was putting a lot of time into it then. So It's interesting because both those guys are probably two of the five smartest football players I ever played with. Yet, isn't it interesting that they weren't the kind of guys that all they talked about or all they did was football? They had other interests, and they put time into other things, which I think is very telling.
Yeah, it's the sense I get, is that the guys who are the most obsessive aren't necessarily the best players, the guys who are able to walk away from it. We've been talking with some of the Seahawks over the last few weeks, and that seems like a recurring message with those guys, too. What was Belichick like? Cool guy?
You guys have already heard this, but he's a lot different than what
everybody says that, but everybody says how funny. He's a wiseacre.
Yeah, he's everything is like 100% negative reinforcement. I mean, 100% negative reinforcement. And what makes it funny is when it's not you, and when he's when he's cracking on a guy that messed up. I mean, the first thing you do every day there is you see the low lights from the day before his practice or game. Like, he'll put up like the five worst plays, you know, like the tackle trips or the cornerback, you know, misses an assignment. And so it's interesting that, you know, a lot of guys don't like it, but obviously he's had success with it. 100% negative reinforcement. Like, you don't want to be the guy that gets yelled at. You don't want to be on the low light video. He never really said very much to me. He said four things specifically to me when I was there. The day I got signed, he came up to me, and I stood up, and he said, you know, happy to have you, and he said, don't stand up. So I thought I was doing the right thing by standing up to meet him. He's like, you don't need to stand up, or don't stand up. Then, third day of practice or second day of practice, I fell down a couple times during practice. He had a really unique ability to say something that you could hear and only you could hear as he was walking by you. So he walked by me and said, stay off the bleeping ground, Tucker. You know, and only I could hear it. And he never stopped, never, like, if it wasn't you he was talking to, you didn't even know he said anything to anybody. He just walked, but found a way to say that to you as you walked by. Then we were playing Jacksonville, and he said, something like, the whole Princeton team's in this game. And then when they were traded me, he brought me. And that's the only time I ever had an extended conversation. They traded me to Cleveland when the Charles Bentley tore his knee, and he said, hey, you know, they need you to start right away. You know, this is a great opportunity for you. And I was like, yeah, thanks. I was actually thrilled. You probably won't hear many guys say this. I was thrilled to be traded from the New England Patriots to the Cleveland Browns because I was going to be fighting my butt off just to make the team in New England, whereas I went to Cleveland and started the next game.
Big fish, small pond.
Yeah. What? And plus, people don't understand. People are like, oh, my gosh, was that horrible? Like, dude, I'm from Reading, PA, okay? I'm not a Patriots fan. I'm not a Browns fan. I'm a fan of my family. And if I have a better chance to earn the $650,000 in Cleveland, I do in New England, I couldn't care less about what team I'm on. Like, tomorrow, if I wanted to play one more year and they said, Ross, you can sign with the Broncos or the Seahawks for $600,000, or the Jacksonville Jaguars for $700,000. I would sign with the Jags.
Come on.
Because, yes, there's a chance that you'll win a Super Bowl, but the chances of that are actually pretty small if you actually look at it. And that $100,000, like, that will go into my daughter's 529 plan. Like, that's something I can count on. Like, that's something that means something to my life. I don't care if I get to the second round of the playoffs with the Seattle Seahawks. I'm not a Seahawks fan. And I know a lot of fans, like, that crushes them.
But yes,
it's the reality.
It crushes the both of us here in 66.
I don't like that at all. Can you? Because you're going to end up. Look, we've seen you out in the town. That money is spent out on Broadway. You're not even going to. That money's never making it to a college fund. Go out and at least, but at least go through the charade that you want to win.
This is one of the great. Listen, I think Kamish Goodell needs to step in. And he's monitoring, and his people are monitoring the use of the N-word in locker rooms and so on. I want to get your thoughts on that, by the way.
Yeah.
But this, we got to stop this. You guys who play the game cannot tell the world that it doesn't matter to you what the – every pro football player – it seems, or most, care more about their college team than they do their pro team. They don't feel that loyalty. We fans don't want to hear it, don't you see? Kamish Goodell needs to step in and put an end to this. No public displays of affection for your rivals.
Well, first of all, nobody's going to say that when they're actually playing. Like, I would never tell you what I just told you when I was playing. And, of course, when I got to Cleveland or any team I'm actually on, of course I want them to win then for multiple reasons. Number one, it's a much more pleasurable working environment. When you're on a losing team in the NFL, dude, it is miserable.
How hard is it for a guy who every single play has to lean up on another 300-pound guy with great force and he's trying to push you down when your team stinks? I think I got to figure that's got to be the worst. I got to go out and get beaten up and for what?
No, see, you don't look at it that way, though, Dave. Number one, the actual playing football, that's like the fun part. What's grueling is the meetings when you're like 3-10.
That would be the worst.
And like, here's our game plan for how we're going to beat, you know, the Patriots. And you're sitting there thinking like, no, we're not. Number one. Number two, you're really not. It goes back to what I said, and maybe this is the benefit of it, because you're saying how bad does it stink to have to do that when you're losing. That's actually when you better be playing better. Because when you're losing, they're going to make a lot of changes. So you need to be your butt off so that the new coach, the new GM, keeps you, A, or B, if he doesn't, you land somewhere else. So if you're really smart, you recognize that that's when you need to be playing your butt off. That's when you better be playing your best football. But it's a miserable, like, imagine walking by, and I don't know what it's like out there at NFL Network, NFL.com, but you walk by people, nobody looks each other in the eyes. Everybody's miserable. The coaches all know they're getting fired. So it's like, imagine if your boss every day entered the room knowing in 3 weeks he was going to lose his job and that everything you were doing at that time was totally pointless.
Well, Black Tie still manages miserable. To do it every day.
Hey, so Ross, now let's, so as far as that goes, Belichick's way, negative reinforcement, maybe he is a cut up behind closed doors, but he seems like from the outside, like a Bob Knight type. And this was the prevailing style of Vince Lombardi and so many others. Now Pete Carroll wins the Super Bowl. And in addition to that, in the last year, the Miami Heat, loosey-goosey, LeBron and company, Chris Bosh and all those guys goofing around and winning a title. The Boston Red Sox with their beards. They seem at least like a merry bunch. You have, who else? Who am I forgetting from the teams, from all the big sports? They all are, Chicago Blackhawks. Yeah, they're also a fun bunch. All this, are we now going to philosophically do away with this nasty kind of coach and even that kind of player, that Kobe Bryant? You know, you talk about Tom Brady has interests outside. Emmitt Smith has. Kobe Bryant has this sort of, when he talks hoops at least, this singular, it's my way, it's my team. And he essentially bullies guys into doing things and taking things seriously on the level he wants them to. Is that going to go the way of the dodo bird in favor of Pete Carroll's player-friendly vibe?
I don't think so. I think there might be more owners that hire those type of coaches. But the one thing I've found to be true is that you have to really be true to yourself. The guys that fall flat on their face are the guys that are phonies and try to be somebody they're not, because players see right through it. Like, I know Eric Mangini a little bit, and he's not the way he acted as the head coach of the Jets and the Browns. Eric's not like that. But I think he felt like, because that's all he knew with Belichick, that that's kind of how he had to act.
And, I have to do an impression of Belichick.
On some level,
right.
McDaniels as well. It's like, guys see that. Like, you know, and it's especially, if you're a young guy and you come from, you know, that lineage like a Belichick, if the guys right away think that you're trying to be like him, you're done. You know what I mean? Like, if they think, oh, my gosh, this guy thinks he's a young – this guy thinks he's Belichick. This guy thinks he's Belichick. And just because you believe in some of the things that your prior boss did, that doesn't mean you have to attempt to be like him in every way. And I think guys see right through that. I think what Pete Carroll, what the success he's had is because he's him. That's him, man. He's like a rah-rah cheerleader, teenage guy. I mean, and Jim Harbaugh. Jim Harbaugh might be the weirdest dude I've ever seen in my life. Like, Jim Harbaugh, like, there's something wrong with that guy. He legitimately has a screw loose, but you know what? He goes with it. I mean, and I think there's all these reports about his act worn thin. I think a lot of the guys think he's hilarious. They're like, dude, he is the weirdest guy. I mean, you talk to those guys, they're like, he is crazy. And you can tell from his press conferences he's crazy. But you know what? He owns it. He owns the craziness. I think any type of style can be successful as long as you are what you are and you own it.
Authenticity, in other words. All right, so speaking of words.
He went from the pleated to the flat front, and that cost him in the playoffs because he gave up being who he was.
Ah, powerful lesson from Adam Rank, right. All right, Tucker, real quick, a couple things, and then we'll wrap it up here. The N-word. The league is trying to legislate it out. It seems very particular to pick one word. I know it's the worst word in the English language, but it sort of is treating a symptom rather than an overall issue. And beyond that, before I let our guest on the phone speak, I'm going to weigh in myself on this. I find it... Look, I'm all for free speech, and I understand the gravity of the word and all that. That's why you cannot legislate it out of society or out of business or whatever else, as far as I'm concerned, because it susses out the people who want to use it. Listen, you have now exposed. Ask Riley Tucker now if he would like to take
whoa,
it back.
Whoa.
Riley Cooper.
Cooper.
What'd I say?
Riley Tucker.
Riley Cooper. I'm sorry. Riley Cooper and Richie Incognito. Let's ask those guys if they would like a mulligan on shooting their mouths off in that way. Too late, fellas. You've exposed yourselves. You've thrown words around. You've said things you shouldn't. It's sort of like unringing the bell or unshooting the gun. Hey, guess what? We want you to, we are a society of laws. If you cross and to make it illegal, essentially, in an NFL locker room, in a society that embraces free speech, is to me loco. I mean, I don't understand why you would want to remove that. And by the way, it also is treating NFL football players largely like children. Hey, we have to save you from yourselves. We have to step in here and protect you.
They're gonna have a giant chalkboard, and they're going to start writing names on it with check marks.
I will not use the – yeah. Anyway, Tucker, your thoughts.
Is you made a couple points there I agree with, but overall, I think you're wrong.
And lay it on me.
Why? Number one, it's not just for, you know, the N-word. It's for any racial, sexual slurs, anything of that kind. And the rule's already on the books. They just want it to be a point of emphasis. And what I think a guy like Richard Sherman is missing – when he says it's an atrocious idea, it's borderline racist, the idea has come from John Wooten and Harry Carson at the Fritz Pollard Alliance. Mm-hmm. The Fritz Pollard Alliance's sole mission is the advancement of African Americans in the coaching and front office professions of the NFL. This is their idea. They're tired of the way, in particular, that word is being used. And let me ask you this. What other society would that be acceptable? Where else in society, should I say, in a workplace environment? Of course, you can't legislate what guys say in their apartments or, you know, when they're out at night or whatever. But can you name one other job, one other place in the world where that would be okay?
I don't think it is.
And even if guys mean it in the way they mean it, I think number one, the NFL is going to have, you know, some older African Americans speak to the guys at the rookie symposium and let them know what that word really means. Because I feel like a lot of, you know, young African Americans don't fully understand the implications of that word, even in the manner in which they use it. But I think more to the point, Dave, which is what you said, is, you know, to try to just have one word, it's going to be broader than that. It's going to be a business workplace conduct policy. So it's not going to be just the N-word. It's going to be a lot more all-encompassing about that in terms of, you know, the things that were said to Jonathan Martin, you know, the text messages, the teasing. Now, I think Roger Goodell and Jason Avant, who just got cut by the Eagles, said this, needs to come up with a player conduct policy, which, by the way, every other profession in the galaxy has on some level. You couldn't work anywhere else And even if you're saying it to a friend, use that word. You can't do that at Procter & Gamble or Ford or wherever. What if a coach said that to a player? And I actually think, guys, that's part of the reason why some of the guys struggle so much when football's over. I mean, they play 6 years.
Mm-hmm.
They're 28 years old. They got to go get a real job. And they haven't grown up at all. Not at all. What they do is they go to practice. Then a lot of them, and this is, you know, whites, blacks, everybody, a lot of the young guys, they play video games for 3 hours. They've never had to grow up. They've always used that language. And then, boom, they're thrust into a job interview. Or, boom, they're thrust into a workplace. You can't get away with that anywhere else. So,
I mean, I do. I hear your point. I hear your larger point. But, of course, there are plenty of places where you can be employed where that sort of talk goes on. I mean, that's, you know, that's playing fast and loose with the facts to say there's nowhere else you could get away with. In a button-down corporate environment, no. But, I mean, listen, there are plenty of any creative endeavor you could do that in. I'm sure pizzerias where people are delivering stuff, that talk goes on. How about policemen? Policemen say some of the – I've heard from their mouths – cops say some of the most racist stuff I've ever heard in my life. I mean, people do that.
Well, that should be allowed.
Well, no, but there are repercussions. There are repercussions beyond though at the point of the use of the word where you can outlaw it. We're a free country now. As a private business, as a corporation, you can legislate that within there. But in my opinion, I'm for free speech. And again, back to my original point, you can't just control the words and the thoughts that you like. Everybody is allowed to have their thoughts, and then they must deal with the ramifications. If a player wants to be racist, then the NFL can lean on him and lean on him hard. And I think Riley Cooper and I think Richie Incognito are suffering as a result of that.
Well, but you know how this whole thing got started, right? I mean,
I get your point with where Harry Carson's coming from, and it's an older generation of African American and the gravity of that word, and it's not being felt by 21st century by a guy who's 25 years of age, you know, in 2014, but. There are different ways. There, Harry Carson, like you say, can address a group of NFL players and educate them. But outlawing it seems, you know, out of line with the way of the U.S. of A.
Yeah, I mean, I think you can't. There is a freedom of speech, but there's also you're also able as an employer to set standards.
Sure.
For conduct. And this whole thing started because Trent Williams of the Redskins. Used the N-word with, you know, when it ends in an A towards an official last year. And the official went after him and called him every name in the book. And the official wanted it because the official was from an older generation. And he was not okay with Trent Williams using that word towards him. And after the game, Trent Williams said, man, the official called me fat and lazy and all these things, and that's not okay. I can't believe he talked to me like that. And then the official said, yeah, I did say those things because he called me the N-word. And so I think that's really, if you look back, that's where this whole thing got started. And then the Incognito stuff and the Michael Sam stuff, that's all kind of gotten to this boiling point where the NFL feels like they have to do something.
I hear you. Okay. All right. We'll cut it off here because we've gone on long enough. Tucker, we didn't even get your opinion on those hideous abominations called the Bucks' new uniforms. We're going to have to do that at a later date, though. Ross Tucker, always a pleasure to kibitz with you. RossTucker.com is the home for all of his stuff. At Ross Tucker NFL. You can track him down on Twitter. The Ross Tucker Football Podcast. It's not as fancy as ours. I might even go program. I might start putting the M-E after it. You know, the program. A-M-M-E.
Oh, my God.
Extra fancy, Tucker. That's how we do it. All right, listen. Enjoy free agency. We'll check in with you as that unfolds. And let's make it a regular thing. All right, Tucker?
Sounds great to me. Hey, anytime we can have a 10-minute thoughtful discussion on the N-word preceded by Tom Brady chugging is a heck of a podcast.
I know. The only thing that would have made it greater is hearing you bellyache along with me about those Bucks hideous uniforms.
I don't get why the NFL is letting them do that.
I want someone to step in and get rid of. All right. Black tie's going crazy.
There's one person in the room that said, hey, these are a good idea. It's crazy. But thanks for having me, Dave. Good talking with you guys.
All right. There he goes. The great Ross Tucker. He continues to perform strongly, Rank, and he, you know, now that we're into March, we're through 2 months of 2014, he is making his case for the best guest in 2014 for the Shecky Award.
Oh, and welcome me to the show, too, by the way. I joined in abruptly.
I welcomed you, and I don't have time because look who's coming through the door right now into Studio 66, the superstar wide receiver, touchdown maker supreme of the Green Bay Packers, or... is he with the Green Bay Packers? That's something we have to discuss here and now with James Jones. What's the poop, fella?
What's going on, man?
How
Thanks
are
for
you?
Having me. I'm good.
Can I tell
I'm
you something good. Right out of the gate?
What's going on?
You're a handsome man.
Appreciate it. I appreciate it.
You're
I
well
try.
Put together.
I get it from my mom, they say.
Well, I can tell you. You got good bones, and I can tell you work out.
I've been working out.
You put it and you drape some clothes on yourself that look nice. They're complimentary to you.
That's another thing. My mom said, "Don't come on there with no baseball cap or nothing."
Is that right?
On TV.
That's good.
I've noticed the knit tie thing is now back in vogue. Is that something I have to do? That's squared at the bottom,
yeah,
kind of knit tie.
That? Yeah, that's just a little swag that you know you add.
He can pull it off.
You know,
yeah.
Are you suggesting, Adam? I cannot.
Up a little bit.
I'm just saying it looks good on him.
Okay.
All right, I got
you. I was going to roll with him if he would have.
James Jones, you're a free agent.
Yes, I am.
I want to talk to you about this. All right?
Let's do it.
Now, the one rule here in Studio 66 is no jive. All right? We shoot straight in here. That's the only way we do it.
Always shoot straight.
Thank you.
Never jive.
Good. Then we're going to get along beautifully. I want you to answer me this question as best you can. As you go into free agency, what is most important to you? Put these into order for me. Chance of winning a Super Bowl. The quarterback who's throwing you the ball, the amount of money they're going to pay, and the uniform that you have to wear. Because if you, like, what if you got drafted by Tampa?
Man,
you wouldn't want that.
Those are nasty uniforms.
Let's talk about that for a second real quick. I'm sorry. Let's get into that. What about James Jones? You're a professional football player. Talk about what happened.
If I had to play for Tampa, I mean, you would have to deal with it. But, it's more like arena-ish to me. It looks like arena football. I mean, you know, when you think of the uniforms in the National Football League, 9 times out of 10, a lot of them are classy. And
that's right.
You know, you think about theirs, and it's arena-ish. But they say it's a lot of tradition behind it, and I don't know what's behind it yet, so I don't want to judge it just yet. But the look of it, I don't know.
It's too much, and you're right, because you know what you say when you say it's too much? It's trying to serve too many masters. It's bitten off more than it can chew. It is like the Samoa cookie that the Girl Scouts sell every year. Some people swoon for this cookie. In my book, give me the lean simplicity of the Thin Mint, you know? It's just some chocolate, some minty flavor, period, you know? That's all you need. The Samoa, it's good, though. Yeah, because it's got everything on it. It's got every possible ingredient on it. Of course, it tastes fine. That's what the uniform is. Yes, right.
Tries a little bit too hard.
That's what I'm getting
saying.
At. Yes.
Okay.
It's cloying.
Yeah,
it's a cloying cookie, and that uniform is cloying.
Yeah, that's a lot going on.
So do you think those are worse or the Jacksonville Jaguars? And will it be a consideration for James Jones if either of those teams want to talk to you? Will you say to your agent, let's put them on the back burner till we hear all other options?
No, I don't care about the uniform if they're going to pay me enough money to take care of my family. But I'll wear any uniform. I mean, I'll go out there in a pamper and a wife beater like my son runs around if that's the case. But no, it doesn't matter. But
that's a good look for a little boy.
I'm taking Jacksonville's uniforms over theirs.
Really? Yeah. That's how grim it's gotten in Tampa already.
Yeah, I'm taking Jacksonville.
Do you talk about that on a – I'm sure your wife talks to you about that if you aren't thinking about that. But how much is that from a husband and two little boys? Do you live in Wisconsin year-round?
Oh, no.
So you come out to California for some of the
year. First plane smoking whenever our season ends. I pray every year it's after the Super Bowl, but it doesn't work out like that. But I'm on the first plane out of there right when the season's over.
But is it still, you know, so part of the year at least is spent up in frigid Wisconsin?
Yeah.
Is that a
still call it home. Yeah.
Do you think about, hey, you know what would be nice? Would be to not play, you know, half our games come November up in cold and everything?
When you're a free agent, man, so many things go through your mind and your head. To be truly honest with you, I mean – just being there in my 7 years, I mean, I've made it home, whether it's cold or not. I've made it home. Me and my family has made it home. So, I mean, I would love to go back, but this is the part of the business that really none of us like. You know, you got to leave some of your close buddies on the team if that's the case, because it's all up to the organization. So, you know, but that list you read off, first and foremost, is taking care of the family. So
money number one.
Money number one.
Okay, fair enough.
I got to take care of the family. You never know how long you're going to play this game. And then number two is winning. I mean, you don't want to be go to a place for a lot of money, and that's why I came back to Green Bay last time. You don't want to go to a place and be miserable neither. So it's a lot of things that goes on.
How good does your quarterback need to be to win a Super Bowl? Here's a little.
I'm looking for an Aaron Rodgers wherever I go.
That's fair.
No, I mean, this is a quarterback-driven league. That's why they get paid the big bucks, man. And you're only really going to go as far as your quarterback's going to take you.
Yeah, but let me just play devil's advocate for a second. If you look at the your team will make the playoffs. I have a new standard in mind. I feel like if you have a top six or eight QB, you're going to make the playoffs almost every year.
Yeah.
You know, Roethlisberger didn't do it, though, so that disrupts that. But, you know, Peyton, Brady, Breeze, your guy, and so on, are going to get in there. But I don't think now, I feel like the teams that have won the Super Bowl since you guys did, Eli, Flacco, and Russell Wilson's really good, but he's young, if nothing else. Those guys nobody held those guys up in the top five or six QBs. Do you need that, or is depth more important?
I'm not saying you need a great quarterback, but, I mean, you need a good quarterback to be successful in this league. And those guys you named that have won the Super Bowl with the Flaccos, the Russell Wilsons, the Elis, those are good quarterbacks. You know, they may not be Brady and Eli and Aaron, but, you know, those guys are real good quarterbacks. And, you know, you need a quarterback to win, basically. I mean, we've went through the struggle with that this year when we lost Aaron and we battled with four different other quarterbacks. And, you know, I think we won two games. So, I mean, it's the reason why those guys make $100 million. You know, those guys are the ones who helps your team win ball clubs. And, I mean, obviously you need a lot of good players, too, though. You need a good defense. I mean, Russell Wilson had a great defense. It wasn't all him by any means.
But, no, right.
But, you know.
How much, and we've talked to A.J. Hawk and who else, Rank? We've talked to a couple Packers since that playoff game.
We've talked to, like, every Packer. You keep parading them in. This is why I had to wear the orange of the Chicago Bears today. It seems like there is not
been. Oh, yeah, we had Randall Cobb last week.
Every
I'm sorry,
pack,
I forgot,
like,
right.
Pretty much anybody who played for the Packers over the last 5 years has sat here in Studio 66.
He might have some Packer in his blood a little bit. That's all right.
Were you – what as a wide receiver? Because we talked to Cobb about it, like I say, and Hawk as well. When that ball was in the air, when Aaron Rodgers in Soldier Field, the season on the line – playing in January on the line, he throws that ball up in the air.
Well, for me,
you thinking, I'm glad that's not me over there?
For me, it was different because me and Randall were on the same side. Mm-hmm. And when I seen the safety, I had a 15-yard stop route. And when I seen the safety run down to me, if you watch the film, I immediately threw my hands up because I knew there was no one on Cobb. And, I mean, I knew Cobb wasn't going to catch it. If you look at his eyes, he was zoomed in, focused. The only thing on his mind was catch the ball, don't run or anything. So I knew, man, we just scored a touchdown, man. So it was unbelievable.
Yeah, that had to be good. And then the following week, though, then you play that terrible game. It was a wonderful game to watch. Yeah. Objectively, but man, if only you could have gone to overtime in that 0 degrees. How bad was it? The cold for you?
Oh,
Hawk told
us
he put his helmet in the sauna at halftime to warm up.
Well, you know, I'm a sissy when it comes to the cold, man. I mean, I'm a tough guy, but when it comes to the cold, man, I am a sissy.
But wait, you don't wear sleeves, don't you?
I do wear sleeves.
You do.
When it gets to that point, I mean, Jordy and Randall always tell me, you don't wear no sleeves. I'm like, look it. I'm a California kid coming out here to Green Bay. I am putting on some sleeves. I like playing comfortable, but it was brutal. It was brutal. But, I mean, we've played in worse. 2007 in Chicago.
I remember
chill.
That game.
It was negative 20s out there, and it was ridiculous with the wind.
Rank, get your thing ready, because now I'm thinking about it. So you played with Brett Favre a little bit, and then Rodgers. Get your little who-would-you-rather questions ready. He does some fun hypotheticals about Favre versus Rodgers. Meantime, answer me this. Do you, has your agent reported back to you? Have the Packers directly said this to you, or have any other teams? Are you, you haven't yet spoken with teams, or have you?
Man, no, I haven't spoken with any teams, and I'm a laid back guy. To be truthfully honest with you, because this is a straightforward show, I've talked to my agent one time and haven't talked to him about numbers. I haven't talked to him about, you know, what teams called. He just calls me, and I trust him with all my heart. And he says, you know, once the ball gets rolling, we're going to get you in the best deal, best situation, and I'm all with it. I don't need to call him again.
But what happens, though, you're a human being. And again, all football players, all professional athletes have egos, or else you wouldn't get to the highest level. What's it make you think if you kind of look back and look? Do you feel like, well, if the Packers want Jordy Nelson $1 more than they want me, then I'll let them find out what that's that world's going to feel
like.
Oh,
no, I'm definitely
not that way.
No, I'm definitely not like that. Like I said,
I would be. I'd be like, fine, I'm going elsewhere. You'll miss me when I'm gone.
When you played with those guys, me and Randall and Jordy were extremely close. So I want them guys to get every dollar that they possibly can get. And if Jordy makes one more dollar than me and I'm still able to make some good money and provide for my family and we could be on the same team, let's do it. I have no problem with that.
Here's one last thing I have to ask you about is, do you feel that maybe you should go to the Pittsburgh Steelers because you were a part of that scam attempt to steal that game in Lambeau with that terrible call? Admit it, I want justice. The Steelers won, but it still was wrong what happened.
Yeah, it was. I mean, I was on the field at that time, and I'm glad it went our way.
Did you say in the huddle, what is going on?
The whole time, I was like, I still don't know what's going on, but let's hurry up and hike it before they call another timeout, and we end up losing the ball some way somehow. But it was crazy.
All right, let's get into it, Rank. Go ahead, throw these questions at our man James Jones.
Got you written down. You're stranded at the side of the road there in Milwaukee, Wisconsin, Green Bay. Yeah. He's the most likely to pick you up.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. You guys.
Brett Favre's going to breeze by. He's going to drive through the puddle on you.
Would he not? Would he not even answer your call?
I don't know if he's going to drive through the puddle on me and all that stuff. But I'm saying Aaron will pick me up.
Does he send it to voicemail when he sees your number come across? Is your number in Brett Favre's phone?
Probably me. It probably isn't. It probably isn't. I probably got to go through Donald Driver or something to get a hold of him. But me and Aaron have a real good relationship. My number's in Aaron's phone.
Okay, a bunch of you guys. Now, this is a group setting. There's a number of you there. Who's most likely to pick up the dinner tab, Favre or Rodgers?
Rodge.
He'd pick it up.
Yeah.
Does Favre, does he get like alligator arms? Does he make...
I don't know if he'll get alligator arms.
I'll be right back, guys. I got to go to the bathroom
I've been around certain people who get alligator arms. But Aaron, I've been around Aaron, and he's picked up the tab numerous times.
Okay.
Yeah.
But as he should, because he's the big...
Yeah, but he's a good dude. He's a good dude. He picked up the tab plenty of times.
If you could have only one of their music collection, whose would you rather have?
Interesting.
Well, I'm going to have to go with Aaron because he's younger.
A little bit younger?
Yeah, Aaron's a little bit younger, so I know he's going to have some stuff that I listen to. Brett may have some stuff that I have no clue of what's going on. You know, he's a little older, so I got to go with the younger guy.
Who rocks a beard better? But in fairness, you have to see the new pictures of Favre.
Well, wait a second. Has Rodgers even had a beard, or are we just going facial hair? Because he goes with the mustache. His thing.
Yeah, he has a bunch of different mustaches, and I mean.
But the Favre pepper-colored beard.
I don't know about
strong.
Aaron's mustaches, though.
No.
I mean, they're unbelievable. He thinks they're sweet and swagged up, but I don't know. I don't know. He's tried to get the receivers in on it, but we always decline.
That wouldn't be a bad move. Like to see Jordy Nelson running
Jordy
around with one of those.
He always tries to get us in there, but we decline that
I'll
invite.
Decline.
So, yeah.
Fair enough. Photobombing, hilarious, or D-move?
Hilarious.
Hilarious.
Yeah.
Wasn't there a time when that was just rude?
I mean, there probably still is a time where it's rude, but I mean, you know, photobombing is part of it now. You know, that's the world we live in now. Everybody's photobombing. But, I mean, if you see some of the photobombs that Aaron does to the captain pictures, I mean, they're unbelievable.
They're good.
Yeah.
Before we let James go ahead.
The scientific results of the survey, you're saying that Aaron Rodgers is the better quarterback. Just so we have that on record.
That's what I'm saying, yeah.
Okay.
That's the tale of the tape. Bottom line. That's it. What is. Yeah. The facts speak for themselves.
We said straightforward, right?
That's exactly right.
You didn't jive us one bit there, James Jones. You know what I think would make you fun in 2014? If you aren't with the Packers. If you're with them, great. A status quo. You're James Jones. You go to a new team, I want you to become a new man. Jimmy Jones.
Jimmy Jones. Hey, and you know, different. I got a lunch ticket today, and they put Jimmy Jones on my thing, so I might switch it up. Jimmy Jones.
I could like that. And then we get, and then we work on the endorsement deal with the sandwich joint. Yeah. What's it called? Jimmy Johns.
Yeah.
Now we're cooking
with
gas.
My wife was a teacher, too, so she had this student, and he always called me Jimmy Jones. So he'll love it. He'll be good. Jimmy
Jones. It has
Jones.
A ring to it.
Yeah.
I like double J.
That's cool. All right. So listen, James Jones, here's what I got to tell you. I don't want you to do, speaking of Brett Favre, don't go to any other NFC North team. Go wherever you want to go.
No NFC North.
No other NFC North. No. I don't want you because you seem like a nice fella, and I don't want you to have to wear that Buccaneers or that Jags uniform. So neither of those. So, all right. So now we're down to about 25 teams. I think Pittsburgh's the front runner.
Pittsburgh,
okay? We agree.
I like San Diego.
Yeah,
for
I know
him.
How to play in the cold, so I definitely.
He wants the
you
warm.
And
yeah.
You and Keenan Allen, that'd be nice.
But he also wants a good quarterback. Yeah, we're really down to like Phil Rivers, and I'm trying
That's not terrible.
Trying to get it just right for Jimmy Jones and his new life.
So we've got him in San Diego. All right,
there it is.
Congratulations.
Done and done. See, it's valuable to sit down for a couple minutes, and you can figure it all out.
Contracts and everything done right here.
All right, listen. Wherever you wind up, Green Bay Packers here on Packers Week at NFL Network. You can watch James Jones Kibitzen on Total Access with Dan Helly and the fellas. And then we'll see over these next couple weeks or months, and we'll look forward to watching you in 2014.
Sounds good. Thanks for having me.
The touchdown maker, Jimmy Jones.
Jimmy Jones.
Hopefully we never have to see him wearing a Tampa Bay Buccaneers uniform for his sake. Please. All right. There he goes. Go ahead. Go do your fancy TV stuff. James Jones. I like him, Rank. We're two for two. I like Ross Tucker. You can go. No, please.
Don't stick around.
I mean, at some point, it's getting awkward. Just go. No. There
he goes. It's becoming – I now understand what you went through when we were talking to all the Ravens, who are lovely people, because all these Packer guys have been great.
Yeah, what are we
– And it hurts me a little bit.
Here's the thing. Black tie – I feel like maybe this is a thing that you should get in touch with Kamish Goodell, or I don't know, maybe a bunch of agents or whatever, and let it be known that we are here in Studio 66. You know, there are agents, and then there are managers, and there are publicists, and there's so on and so forth. Maybe we could fill a consultant role in the lives of these. I'm not asking 10%. I'm not asking 5%. I'm not doing it for love either, though. It's
a business, right? We've got families, too.
That's exactly right. How about we say 3%, I go 2%, you go 1%.
1% is fine.
Black tie needs a taste, though. Black tie needs a little taste, and it comes out of your end.
You know what? We'll buy him lunch.
All right. See, we can figure it all out here. We boiled it down. Why is James Jones' agent now have to bother? He doesn't have to bother taking 32 different phone calls. We got it down to like 5 or 6 viable options for
that. We got him down in San Diego. I think that's a nice fit for him.
We're going to send him up to the banks to the Three Rivers as well. We got to see. We're not going to make any hard
Kick
and fast
tires.
Decisions today.
But he's already shown that he doesn't want to play in the cold if he's got a reasonable chance to play for a warm weather team.
I feel rank as we wrap it up here today, and we'll be back with another episode
We're wrapping it up already, Rank. Because I was hoping to pimp my appearance at the Irvine Improv this Saturday. I don't
want
to do it now. It feels like we don't have enough time.
And what day
to
is
say
it?
That I'll be at the Irvine Improv on Saturday, March the 8th at 10:30 p.m. You show up. My man Caesar showed up at the Bray Improv last week. Got the Blake Bortles photograph, which was awesome. The photo's on Twitter and Instagram and all that stuff. Another guy came up and asked for your autograph, which I'm like, how about you just ask Dave? Mm-hmm. He's approachable.
I'm like Ringo Starr, though. A few years, like remember a couple years ago, he just decreed no more interviews.
Right.
You know, it's enough. And I feel that way, too.
Is that right?
I mean, maybe I'll make an exception or two. But, all right, real quick, though, right?
Okay.
I'm glad – I mean, I apologize that we couldn't accommodate your request to –
Just real quick, speaking of Blake Bortles, just a reminder that Indy Sarah will be getting the Marcus Allen headshot.
Do we have any others? We have Maurice
MJD. I didn't want to give her MJD because she's a Colts fan, and that would be kind of weird and awkward. So we do have Marlon Wayans, who is going to the first
Wait,
listener.
Somebody already claimed that one.
Yeah, the first listener who finished last week's episode. He hit us up on Twitter. He will be getting that.
By the way, a shout out and thanks and also condolences on your empty lives.
Oh,
but
come on.
So many people dropped me a line on Twitter, Rank, Black Tie, hit us up on Twitter to let us know that they made it through all 90 minutes of our basically pointless podcast. I mean, we got off the rails
it
about 10 minutes in and spun for... Yeah, it was Hooey and Applesauce Supreme. Yeah, you know, all you can eat or all you can hear, Hooey and Applesauce. So thanks for enduring the entire 90 minutes there. I think this one was probably... all told, more enjoyable, more information. We learned about Tom Brady chugging beer. Pretty cool.
That was pretty cool.
I like that story.
I wouldn't have guessed that about him, but I would have figured him being a regular guy, I could see that he would have had some sort of superhuman strength, like he was able to eat 50 buffalo wings in one sitting.
Oh, I've done that, you know.
Well, yeah, but I mean, again, that's, to me, very impressive.
Thank you. I once ate, in fact, I ate
Weren't
50.
Weren't you a champion?
Well,
you like to say?
No, not technically. I once went to a place in Bloomington, Indiana, when I was a student. Mm-hmm. They would have, I think it was on Monday nights, they would have wing eating thing. They would
nice.
Have, you know, you'd sign up they'd call your name kind of thing. And so I got in, and you had 15 minutes to eat 50 wings.
Right.
I did it in 14 minutes and 35 seconds.
Very nice.
The like 2, 3, 4 weeks later, because I had met the minimum standard, I advanced to the next round. This is a big tournament, a national tournament, and the finalists got to go to the Super Bowl or something like that. I think it was
right.
the Super Bowl. So the next round, it was 70 wings, and you had 20 minutes to do it. This mm-hmm. time, I improved upon my 50 wing
Whoa.
Total. I did 14 minutes and 20 seconds. I actually, by 15 seconds, ate 20 wings faster, the 70, than I ate the 50. Remarkable. That's what a champion does. He rises to the challenge. You don't like just maintain status quo. No, you
right.
actually elevate your effort. But by the next round, it was as many wings as you could eat in a half an hour. I knew I couldn't compete there.
Then you get the competitive eaters. Did it cost
yeah,
you
Yeah, it
any
was grotesque people, yeah.
Did it cost you any money to get into this contest?
Not a penny.
Because here's the thing. There used to be a place across the street from Cal State Fullerton called Scalzo's. And on Monday night, they would during football, they would have a taco eating contest. And every week I would sign up and eat 4. And that was it. Like, all these guys would be just throwing down tacos. I'd be like, I got 4 free tacos.
I love that you just said that, because that is when it was all you can eat in a half an hour. They would bring them to you in baskets of 25. So I ate 25. Then the next basket that arrived, I took a bite of the one wing, and then I gave it to my couple of friends who were with me. Because I'm a gentleman.
Yes.
You know? I got class, you understand.
That is classy.
All right, Black Tie. What'd you say? We're going too long here?
Yeah, we're going long. I just wanted to remind you guys, the winner of the Marlon Wayans headshot, Brandon Ramsey. He was the first one to let us know that he got to the end of last week's podcast. That was
speaking
of
classy.
It was 90 minutes. It was 91 minutes after the podcast was posted.
Wow.
It was immediate. Yeah, that was pretty impressive.
Well, then I doubly issue my condolences to that poor soul.
MJD headshot still up for grabs.
We got to get Black Tie. If people like these headshots, then when James Jones and other guys like that are in here, we should get their autographs and then give those away too. Or is that somehow?
Is there rules like
we started
ways
out
and means committees who are going to be on?
I don't
case
know. We
that?
Started out with Ross Tucker telling the tale of him selling off his autographs. The question I needed to ask him was, though, I wanted to share. We went in the other direction, but I wonder how much he made off of those, because I do have some good ones. You know, I got Willie Stargell, you know, Pittsburgh legends almost entirely, but still, Lynn Swan, Mean
not
Joe,
bad.
I got
not
all.
Bad.
I got them all. If they're Pittsburgh legends, I probably got them. Not Roberto Clemente, of course. That predates me. But, yeah, I wonder, do people buy autographs in the 21st century? It seems like that was something that went on in the late 80s.
Yeah, who does that anymore?
I don't know. I don't have much. All right, listen, Black Tie, do we know what's coming up on the next episode this week?
Handsome Hank will be making his return.
Oh, yeah, we've got to go over some True Detective.
Stuff and his True NFL stories, where he's going to be telling a story either about Reggie Bush, Andrew Luck. I don't know. He has a bunch of true NFL stories.
It's interesting.
I thought he pulled the Regis, though. I thought he was done.
Forever? No, when he walked out of the podcast the last time? No, he just was raw about it turning to NBA talk, which he doesn't like.
By the way, this is like the fifth podcast in a row where Kobe Bryant once again came up. You brought him up talking to Ross Tucker earlier. I don't know what for. It has to stop.
He was talking about the same talking point that he's talked about over the last 5 times.
It needs to stop, Shaq.
Let's see how quickly we can get Hank to quit on Thursday.
I find that interesting.
You know, this would have been the perfect one to do, because LeBron just scored 61, and I was prepared to come in and be like, that's going to be our talking point. More impressive, LeBron 61 or Kobe's 81?
Let's throw that question to Black Tie.
Well, I actually tweeted this out last night saying the crazy thing about LeBron and Durant's little scoring binge that they're on is that the efficiency at which you're doing it, and I got a lot of responses from even from one of our producer editors here at NFL.com, T-Mon, saying, well, Kobe dropped 81, bro, and all that stuff. I'm not talking about totals here, guys. I'm talking about field goal percentage, then rebounds, their assists, the other stuff they bring to the game. Kobe in his prime was never the efficient scorer that LeBron and Durant are. He just wasn't.
Of course not.
I mean, that's why I lay my case. The numbers say, the way I break it down to a lot of these youngsters is that MJ was essentially Kobe Bryant-type scoring and mentality, but with LeBron efficiency. Kobe Bryant is not that efficient.
Last question. True. I want to ask this of LaDainian Tomlinson on the air, because I asked him this a couple weeks ago, and I bring that up because I'm a name dropper. I asked him this, and it's a fun debate, just on the offensive side of the floor. Forget their defensive attributes, because Kobe in his prime was a pretty good defender. Who would you rather have for a three-year, five-year window as a scorer, as your number one scorer, Kevin Durant or Kobe Bryant?
I just going off what I said, I just got to go with Kevin Durant. He's going to do it in a less amount of shots. He's going to be less disruptive to the offense, and he's going to, you know, he's a better shooter. It's end of the day. Kobe has a lot of moves, a lot of skills, but if you're calling all these ISOs and taking all those hero ball shots, that's going to interrupt the rest of the game, interrupt the rest of the team. So,
can you imagine though? Think about that. Kevin Durant is in what, year five of his career now? I agree with you 100% that it's remarkable to declare him now a better offensive option than probably the third best scorer or fourth best scorer in NBA history. The greatest offensive players in NBA history probably go something along the lines of Wilt, Michael Jordan. I guess you got to figure out a way to get Magic Johnson in there too.
Not as a scorer though. He's not as a scorer,
but on the offensive side of the floor. But okay, yeah, you're right. But you know, being the scorer, being the finisher. We're not talking. Kareem is one of the great finishers.
But Magic proved that he could if he needed to.
I know, but he's not. Black Tie's right. He's not in this kind. We're not talking offensive side of the floor. We're talking scoring. You know, just pure fill it up kind of guy. The 80s had more.
What
of
about
those.
That? Irvin. What about Bernard King? Like that guy.
He could fill it up, that's for sure.
Glenn
Rice. Don't get me wrong. Kobe is probably the most refined offensive weapon in terms of skills, in terms of moves, all the stuff he has. He's a guy who clearly watched Michael and said, you know what, I'm going to add a little something to every Michael move. And he has all that in his repertoire. He just isn't as efficient.
Fair or not, the thing that, for me, that takes down Kobe a little bit is that he is a facsimile of Michael Jordan, not just in style of play.
And mannerisms, everything.
I mean,
in interviews,
it seems as though, hey, I watched Michael Jordan and this is how you do it. Yes,
exactly.
Everything is the same as Michael Jordan. LeBron, at the very least, is his own thing. His own thing. And by the way, I'll say again what I've said before. He will go down as the best player of all time.
Debatable, but essentially Kobe represents that generation
anything, you understand
of
anything is debatable. It doesn't make the two sides equal, you understand. We can debate and argue all you want. It doesn't mean that there's merit on either side, by definition.
All right, enough Kobe talk, guys.
I do want to say this. Speaking of debates, go back to the uniform thing real fast. I went at the Buccaneers uniforms. Dwayne Munn, who runs all the Twitter-related stuff, all the social media stuff here at NFL Media, likes those uniforms. I don't know how that's possible. But anyway, you can find our debate, our written debate, our back and forth about the virtues or lack thereof of those Tampa Bay Buccaneers uniforms.
You want to cut this right here?
Yeah, you want to do more of it?
No. I don't want you to send people there.
Why?
I don't feel that you fared very well in that one.
Is that right?
Yeah.
Dwayne Munn's argument in favor of the Buccaneers uniform.
He kind of got you on a TKO. Yeah, he kind of.
TKO? Two points were these. One, they're awesome.
Yep.
And two, they have side paneling, which I'm pretty sure they could have done in any color.
He called you an old man.
It got bad. I'm cool, and therefore I'm younger than you, therefore I'm cooler than you, and you don't get it, old man, is his card.
That was pretty good.
All right.
I will say this about the Bucks uniforms. It's, Rank, you play Madden. It's essentially like the created team options where it's like, How are you going to have this one uniform that looks completely different from the other 31? It makes zero sense.
It's that is exactly right. They're not thinking about being complimentary to the team they're playing. The reason the Raiders have maybe the best uniform is because it looks good against anybody that they're playing. The Chiefs, that's true for. The Niners, that's true for. The Cowboys, to some degree. This is an apocalypse. No matter who you put them against, they're going to look ridiculous out on the field with this team that has 17 colors in it. It looks like Darth Maul. I had only seen the white jersey yesterday. Mm-hmm. Now I've seen the red jersey with the pants and the black. They look like Darth Maul because it's got a little bit of orange in there.
Darth Maul's awesome.
As though they used a little bit of bronzer, or like Darth Maul with a little bit of bronzer mixed in there.
All right. What happened to the Damashek I used to know? The guy who I remember when I was listening to the radio here in Southern California, first defending those Seahawks uniforms after Super Bowl 40. I remember the first time I ever heard you. You were on the Corolla show. You had just come back from the Super Bowl, and you were talked about, because I hated those Seahawks uniforms, and your first response was like, they're very striking in person.
Let me tell you why I said that at the time.
You're not starting anymore? Man, you should be starting.
I just felt like playing that. It's just Michael Robinson talking about his
Seahawks. He wore those uniforms and then the newer ones. I said that because I was trying. It was a lame attempt to be classy. I was getting beaten up by all the Seahawks fans. You got your Steeler stole that Super Bowl, all that stuff.
Is that right?
I was just trying to take the high road and say something nice about that team.
I thought you were a nice young man for saying that.
You've since learned much better.
Well, now I get it.
All right, Ross Tucker, James Jones. Both swell. We'll be back with more Huey and Applesauce later in the week. In the meantime, thanks so much, football fans. It's been a thin slice of heaven.